John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live at 710sports.com. On demand everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app. Now, John Clayton.
And joining us in the Venue Kings hotline is Kevin Seifert from ESPN.com. Lots to get into. And, of course, the big news popping yesterday that, at least temporarily, the NFL is suspending. And we're going to spend a lot of time talking about this because it's such a polarizing type of subject, the national anthem. So they are talking to the players. The Dolphins came out with the team-by-team venue of what they're going to do. And what they said is that, you know, they put it under player conduct, giving them the ability, if they wish, to suspend a player for four games. You know, not that they would, but I think that at least gets the dialogue going. This thing, Kevin, I know from being back at the owners' meeting back in Atlanta, this has been a mess all along.
It has, John, and all of that period since then, the mess that happened since they imposed that policy is now kind of erased because they're back to square one. They're now where they probably should have been all along, which is at the table with the NFL Players Association trying to figure out something that can work for everyone. Clearly what the owners imposed in May didn't work for the players. There were already starting to be indications, including one from Jarrell Casey from the Titans, that there were still going to be protests, and then it was going to be up to each team to decide whether to punish those players. So the issue that the owners tried to solve in May was not solved. They'll get another crack at it here, and hopefully they can come up with something that will work for everyone. And finally, as I'm sure all your listeners are hoping as well, this will no longer be a day-to-day, week-to-week issue in the NFL.
No doubt. But I think I have one. Now, again, would the players have to gain something to be able to at least get some agreement? Let's say, for example, the NBA, they have an agreement in the CBA that you have to stand for the national anthem. Okay, to get that, would it be out of the question? And I wouldn't be for this at all, but again, I think it may be one where you would say, okay, if you all accept, you can get something, you know, if you have to all be solidified in doing the national anthem, that will not test for marijuana unless it's an arrest in a certain state that doesn't allow marijuana.
Something like that. You know, I think the Players Association is in a good spot, and the players are in a good spot from a pure negotiating standpoint, that they have something that the NFL owners really want, which is their cooperation, full 100% cooperation on this anthem thing to make it no longer be this big, huge controversy. And the clearest win for the NFL would be to come out of this with the union agreeing that everyone will be on the field and stand for the anthem. And that there's certainly some players who would like to have the ability to protest. But it's possible from a pure negotiating standpoint that they would be willing to give up their right to protest during the actual anthem in exchange for something that can help the union or the players achieve a goal in another place. It could be the marijuana policy. It could be some other concession that the owners have been holding back, maybe something with personal conduct or something that the players have wanted and can use, as cynical as it sounds, to reach an agreement that will allow the NFL to extricate itself here. Because if the NFL can get an agreement that says where the players agree that they're all going to stand during the anthem, that's a win for them. And they can stand. And for those who would protest and say you're muzzling the players, they can say, well, hey, you know, the players themselves agreed to it. So they would have that cover from the union. So that is probably, from a pure negotiating political standpoint, that's the win the NFL would love to get. And the question is, as you posed, what would the players need in order to get to that point, and what would the owners give up? So maybe, I don't have any inside knowledge, it could be a concession on marijuana testing, but it could be something like that. The optics of it would be a little bit tough to swallow, maybe, that the players are willing to stand for the anthem in exchange for being allowed to use marijuana. But there's a medical argument that could be made there too, but something that the players want and the owners could give up might be the key to figuring this thing out.
Okay, enough on the anthem. Let's go into football. You spend a lot of time talking to officials, talking with the league as far as how they're going to officiate. How much of a mess is to start to look at? Because I get the feel there's a lot of confusion over some of the new rule adjustments.
Yeah, they're kind of in this perfect storm where when it's been so long, you almost forget. The catch rule happened. the helmet rule, the new helmet rule happened and the kickoff happened. I talked to Terry McCauley, the referee who retired this year to go to NBC Sports and be the rules analyst. And he said that in the 20 some years he's been an official and a referee, this was the biggest, most significant group of rule changes he's ever seen in one off season. So you already have a tremendous amount from an officiating standpoint to absorb and change. And at the same time, they have arguably the least experienced group of certainly referees and maybe overall officials that they've ever had, because they have these four retirements. Two they expected, Ed Hockley and Jeff Triplett right after the season, but two more because they were hired by networks, which is Terry McCauley and Gene Steratore. So suddenly they have four new referees for the first time ever in one season. And so they have this enormous experience gap to make up while they're still trying to figure out how to officiate. I think the catch rule will work itself out, but the helmet rule, there's a lot of potential intricacies there, especially how in the world could these guys see if, like, an offensive guard and a defensive tackle are lowering helmets to initiate contact with each other. It's very difficult to see there in the trenches. So there's a lot of technical things like that to work out with the helmet rule. And the kickoff rule is actually probably, and this is what McCauley said as well, probably the biggest rule change that these guys have seen in a generation. And the worst thing is, because it happened so late in the offseason, they're still working out the kinks. And even though they've already published the rule book, they're still potentially tweaking some of the wording to help it clarify for officials exactly how it's supposed to work. And they might have to republish the entire rule book here a few days before, as training camp starts, just to make sure that officials have the language that allows them to execute these rules. So in that rule, especially the kickoff rule, there is a lot of confusion throughout the league still, and we're only a few days away from training camp.
Yeah, that's pretty scary. And of course, with the turnover with the four referees that are gone, that's going to make it even tougher. I know I talked to Dean Blandino about a week or so ago, and he even said that's a very concerning thing.
Yeah, no doubt. Because we all know the referee sets the tone for any crew. And what I was talking to another former ref, Jim Dopoulos, and what he pointed out was usually what happens when there's a new referee is a rookie referee is you load up his crew with veteran guys at all the other spots, at umpire, side judge, field judge, and what have you. And that helps mitigate the experience gap that the referee has and allows him to focus on the things that he needs to do as a referee. But there were so many new referees that they don't have enough really experienced guys to spread out. And so in some cases, there's some relatively inexperienced crews with a rookie referee. And Sean Hockley has a rookie official on his staff, for example. And so it might not be anything that the average fan will notice or even the really observant fan will notice, but it adds the level of difficulty to what these guys already had.
Hey, now, one of the things that you wrote for ESPN.com is that 20 most important things that you miss. Kind of go over what some that people might have missed.
Well, we talked about the rules, the anthem rule, the helmet rule, the catch rule, the kickoff rule. Another big thing that happened, sort of driving a lot of that, was that they got to the end of the year and they counted up all the concussions, and there was 291 concussions throughout the course of the 2017 season and postseason and preseason. And that was the most they had on record. So a lot of the things that we talked about were descended from that finding. It's the first full year they've had a chief medical officer on board. It's Dr. Alan Sills. And he had what he called a call to action at the combine and said, we have to figure out a way as a league to drive these numbers down immediately. So they came up with all these rules. They said for the first time they joined with the NFLPA and banned 10 helmet models that they thought were either by testing underperforming or outdated. So that's the first time they've ever told players you can't wear certain helmets. And they also identified that last year especially there was a big uptick in training camp concussions in the first part of the even before the preseason started, and sort of that acclimation period where guys, there's a lot of teams that are doing live drills and just getting back into the groove. And so they have sent out detailed data reports to teams that affected, and not banning any particular drills, but but telling them, hey, this is when you guys had a lot of concussions last year. Let's see if you can figure out a way to not have quite as much contact for that to occur. So that's something that's going on. We talked about referees. You know, Thursday night for fans will now be on Fox. It's something to keep in mind. They got a new deal that pays them an average of $660 million a year annually for that package. And that is in addition to Amazon streaming that was renewed. So they're now going to continue to stream and continue to find new ways to get revenues on the internet. And there's a few other, you know, you look on the field and you think, well, don't forget the Kirk Cousins fully guaranteed contract. He set a new precedent there and potentially could be followed at least by some other star quarterbacks over the course of their careers. And that signing had a ripple effect when you saw Alex Smith go from Kansas City to Washington to replace him. You know, Patrick Mahomes takes over in Kansas City. And then you have to remember the Colts hired two head coaches this offseason. Josh McDaniels agreed and then reneged to become the head coach, and that's why Frank Reich is there. So a lot of stuff on and off the field that happened over the course of 160 or so days.
Okay, you can read Kevin Siebert at ESPN.com. Thanks for joining us in the Venue Kings Hotline.
Thanks for having me, John.
And you can check out the show on the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Coming up next, we will get the report card out and start doing some grades. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On demand with the 710 Seattle Sports app. It's time for the report card with the professor.
And we'll get to the report card in a second. Don't forget, you want to win a pair of Seahawks season tickets by participating in the 6 Degrees of Danny, Dave, and More. They've compiled a list of 100 celebrities they want to interview on their show. And if you can convince one of them to call in, you could win tickets to every Seahawk home game this season. Details and rules at 710sports.com/win. And, of course, the report card is when we go ahead and just grade the smart, the dumb, the interesting, the non-interesting. What's out there is what people were saying, what people were doing, and what they're not doing. We grade all those in the report card. Samora, what do we have?
Well, first up, we have Gronk swimming with the sharks in the Bahamas.
He
did it as part of a ESPN the magazine story that's out this week with Sam Alipore from ESPN, and they did do it under the guidance of some experts from Discovery Channel's Shark Week team. Here's a little sound from that.
Holy shit. Look at all these sharks. This is crazy,
dude. This is scary.
Where do we get into?
So, my man, the Gronk, I mean, I don't know. Did you see the special that they had on ESPN where they were doing the body edition? And, of course, no surprise there that Gronk really enjoyed not having his clothes on.
Yeah, I did see that.
Did you see that? I mean, he was walking around, and of course, you know, no inhibitions for my high school chum went to my high school. But, yeah, it's like, well, anything Gronk does, particularly this year, you know, I have to give him an A because, you know, number one, I mean, he had a horse that was Kentucky Derby worthy. I mean, he finished second in the last major race in the Triple Crown. I mean, you know, now he's still waiting to get some kind of a contract extension. He's probably going to go into acting at some point. I mean, Gronk is Gronk, and so interesting to see him on the Shark Tank and giving a little preview of Shark Week. But, hey, that's my man, the Gronk. You got to like that. I give him an A.
Don't teams have clauses where you can't even, like, play pickup basketball because you might get hurt?
Yeah,
Where is swimming with sharks on that list?
I would say pretty high. But, I mean, what was it? I think it was remember the running back, Steven Jackson, who had been with the Rams?
Yeah.
And Steven was doing some shark diving right off the coast of Africa one off season. So I guess it's okay as long as you don't get bitten.
Yeah. Well, thank goodness he came back whole.
That's true.
Because he's fun to watch once the season starts. Next up, we have James Harrison, former Steelers linebacker that went over to the Patriots after some contention with his departure from the Steelers last year. He was on Undisputed, and Skip Bayless asked him if he kind of backed him into a corner. He asked him if Tomlin was a far better, or if Belichick was a far better coach than Tomlin. And he didn't say that, but he did say that he thinks that Belichick handles discipline better.
Everyone is going to be on the same page. It's not going to be anything as far as someone doing their own thing. And I think, you know, over there, their co-coaching staff is like that. You know, you're going to know what you're doing. I mean, it's meetings after me. I ain't never been to so many meetings in my life. And I think, you know, that's really what helped me pick up that defense so fast. I mean,
okay, give us some specifics. How can Tomlin upgrade in discipline?
I mean, just, you know, being more consistent across the board with everyone. You know what I'm saying? From from your stars to your you know, your special teams.
You want him to hold players accountable.
Who?
Mike. You want him to hold everybody accountable because it seems to me that Coach Belichick does
easier,
that.
I think it's easier if you hold everyone accountable mm-hmm. because you don't have to treat anyone differently because of a certain situation right. or a certain player. It's a lot easier across right. the board. You're not playing. It don't look like you're playing favorites.
Right. So it looks like when you go to New England, Coach Belichick, everybody is – you get treated the same.
Man, I seen Tom Brady run into him being scared to be late. Now, you see that, like, yeah. I don't even know what happens if you're late to a meeting over there.
Because everybody get their own
yes.
time.
Oh, very interesting. I mean, I think it was very good perspective, and so kind of give him a-. I mean, I like the one quote in, I think, that interview, what he said, or at least an interview he had this week, is that, you know, he didn't think the Patriots had a lot of defensive players, a lot of defensive talent, and he says that, you know, he kind of thinks for that to be as successful as the Patriots been over the Steelers, that means that probably Bill Belichick's a better coach than Mike Tomlin, and of course, you know, that may sound like a swipe at Tomlin, but I think there's validity to that. And so I think James Harrison, who's now, 39 years old, has been around forever, good perspective on what he sees, and so I kind of give him an A-.
Yeah, that was the least defensively talented squad that I've seen Belichick take to a Super Bowl, so you do have to give him some credit on coaching there. It showed in the end, but that was also maybe the Malcolm Butler benching. Mm-hmm. But I think also that the Harrison's quotes make you wonder if maybe the Roethlisbergers and the Antonio Browns of the world and the Steelers get away with some things.
Mike is a player's coach. There's no question about that. I don't think they get away with a lot. I mean, you know, they probably, well, let's put it this way. It's not going to be as strict and it's not going to be as non-fun as being around my Bill Belichick. I think that's pretty evident. But overall, I think that, both are great coaches. The advantage goes to Belichick.
Yeah. I guess we can squeeze in one tiny one here. ESPN's Jeremy Fowler wrote about TJ Watt's rigorous, I will call it, training, which involves one day of rest a week. He works out 6 days a week. He eats 8,000 calories and drinks 2 gallons of water a day. According to health.gov, the recommended average daily calorie intake per day for a 21 to 25-year-old male is 3,000. And he eats 5,000 more than that a day.
Well, we shouldn't be surprised because that's the same kind of regimen, maybe a little bit easier than his brother.
Probably.
His brother, J.J. Watt, is even worse. I mean, in fact, people worry that he's going to have his career shortened because he works out way too much. So I guess, you know, from brother to brother, that's pretty well. And of course, I mean, isn't Russell on an 8,000-calorie diet? I know he was about a year or so ago, so maybe
is
he's
he?
Changed. Yeah, he,
I guess
he's on
it's
a big
not that much. If
he
you're...
eats 8 meals a day or something like that.
Yeah, and I mean, it's all really high-protein, healthy stuff. Like they said, Chipotle is a cheat day for him.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it sounds like a lot.
A lot of food, yes. I don't know. I like, wish I could eat that much food. Hey, that's you can check out the show in the 710 Sports app, driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Coming up next, we take your text questions at 710-710. John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Chrissy Teigen, a Sports Illustrated model, longtime Seahawks fan.
All this week and next, get one of the 100 celebrities on Danny, Dave, and Moore's list to call 206-726-5484 anytime during their show.
I'm calling in for Derek Martin.
You can win a pair of season tickets this year to see the Hawks.
Say hi to my husband.
And this is someone who is not on our list but should be.
John Legend.
206-726-5484. For contest rules and the list of celebrities, go to 710sports.com.
Hey, are you looking for some summer fun? Dr. King, you gotta check out King LASIK's Summer Adventure Guide, right?
Don, here are a few of my favorites. Spend the day tracking down orcas, dolphins, and seals while kayaking around San Juan Island. And don't forget to paddle in for some oysters at Westcott Bay. Another one of my favorites would be hiking in the Olympic National Park. Beautiful views of the mountain and ocean. Hurricane Ridge is a great family trip. or try an overnight backpacking trip through the spectacular enchantments, meadows, glacial lakes, and crystal clear streams.
Man, those are awesome adventures.
There's no better time to get outside and do it with natural clear vision. The LASIK procedure is pain-free, it's over in just minutes, and you'll be on your summer adventure the very next day.
Hiking, swimming, water skiing, or just relaxing and taking in the views. Summer is so much better with perfect clear vision. Don't wait another day. Get $1,000 off King LASIK's most advanced technology when you have the procedure done by August 31st. Schedule your free consultation today at kinglasik.com. That's kinglasik.com.
Listen to what Chris said about Andro 400.
I've lost almost 40 pounds in 10 weeks. My son was getting married, and when I went for the suit fitting, I was a size 48. And when I went back to do the final fitting, I was a 44. I have more energy, that's for sure. I probably lost 4 inches around my belly. I'm 57, and I'm back when I was in my 30s.
Here's what Dwayne said about Andro 400.
This product really works. I'm an old guy and I don't trust nobody. I've tried all kinds of stuff. It's one of the few things I've ever bought that works. I couldn't believe it. I feel better. I have more energy. I walk 12 miles a day. I feel great. It changed my life. It really has. It's really incredible.
Guys, if you'd like to lose belly fat, gain energy, and feel great, try Andro 400, the safe, natural, and affordable way to boost your testosterone. Go to andro400.com or call 888-400-0435. 888-400-0435. Andro400.com.
Policies issued by American General Life Insurance Company, Houston, Texas. Not available in all states. For details, visit AIGdirect.com.
Do you have a family? Would you like to help make sure they'll be taken care of if anything were to happen to you? If you answered yes, you probably need life insurance. Now, do you think life insurance is expensive? If you answered yes to that too, you definitely need to give AIG Direct a call. We could find you a $250,000 policy for just $14 a month, which means you could save hundreds of dollars a year. Call us now for a free, no-obligation quote. 1-800-700-1368. Since 1995, we've helped millions of people find out if they could save up to 70% on their term life insurance. See how affordably we can help you protect your family. Call AIG Direct now for your free quote. 1-800-700-1368. You could save up to 70%. That's 1-800-700-1368. 1-800-700-1368.
Shane Company's proud to be the number one family-owned jeweler in Seattle. And today, I couldn't be more proud to introduce you to someone in my family who's been running Shane Company with me for years, my son, Rorden.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Rorden, you're a real hands-on leader. You talk with our customers. You work with our designers. You travel overseas and maintain the relationships with the diamond cutters that our family has worked with for generations. Thank you for your commitment.
Dad, I'm passionate about the work we do, and I'm grateful for the values I learned from you and Mom. Honesty, integrity, treating customers like family, and offering the best value for jewelry that will last a lifetime.
That's why Shane Company's been the most trusted jeweler in Seattle for nearly 40 years. Now you have a friend.
Two friends.
Now you have two friends in the jewelry business. Shane Company and ShaneCo.com.
This hour of the John Clayton Show is presented by Washington's Lottery.
You're listening to the Professor, John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
And, of course, at this time, we always do our text questions at 710-710. So let's text away, Maura.
Right, the 360 says, would the Mariners be willing to trade Heredia along with any prospects to acquire pitching or a better bat in the outfield?
Yeah, and that's the point I was making when we were trying to think through, and I know on the under further review, and that's what I have to think that, Heredia and maybe Ryan Healy. And again, you don't want to give these guys up because they're good young players under player control, but now you're trying to find, some options, and you know that you need first base time, and, Healy at the moment, I think his on-base percentage is 300, but he's got the 18 home runs. There's clear value there. I mean, he's a guy that a couple years ago in Oakland was on the futures team, and Heredia, I think, is a good, promising outfielder. He's going through some stretches right now. So, I mean, I think you would be reluctant to do it, but if you need to, I think those would be the two players that you would think of, Healy and Heredia, that if you have to sacrifice, you might have to sacrifice.
All right, the 206 says, Dear John, is New England still the team to come out of the AFC to make it to the Super Bowl?
Until we find out something differently, I'd have to say yes. I mean, he's certainly the guy that, that's the team because you have Tom Brady and you have Bill Belichick, and they keep on finding ways to be able to do it. And then what helps them as opposed to some of the other divisions is the division's so easy. I mean, I don't know if we want to go with Nate Davis's predictions, but I know that, you know, they've got Miami probably is about a 7-9 team. I think they had Buffalo as a 4-win team and the Jets as like a 3-5 win team. And if that's the case, you know, they're almost given 5 or 6 wins from the very start because of the division play.
206 says, any chance Shaquem Griffin becomes our third starting linebacker by the end of the season?
There's a chance, yeah, absolutely. I mean, open competition is going to be there, and the more he learns, the faster he learns, there is that chance. And so I know at the moment they have him on the weak side behind K.J. Wright, but, you know, that's a natural position to try to flip over. I mean, he's got the speed to be able to do it, and you want that speed. But, as the season goes on, you just never know.
The 206 says, how many yards and touchdowns do you forecast for Brandon Marshall?
Probably, I'd say, in the 400 range, maybe 40 catches, 400 yards. I did this a little, you know, because, you know, I'm always database geek and stuff like that. Once you get into, like, your age 32, and if you go on the Pro Football Focus, approximate value, you know, once you get past 31, it usually goes down to 4 or 5. And so in 5, that's usually like a 50-catch, 500-yard season. And so, you know, again, you guys like him who are, you know, borderline Hall of Fame receivers can do better than that. But I'm being modest right now, so I'm saying 40 for 400.
425 wants to know, Professor, did you work with the late Stuart Scott at ESPN? And if so, what was your relationship like?
Oh, I did. I mean, but I was on him with him many, many times, doing SportsCenter and that. I mean, he's just a great guy, a great person. I mean, he's so level-headed. I mean, just a great, great professional. So we miss him. He was so good. But yeah, I worked with him many, many, many years.
Yeah, he was really fun to watch. Definitely missed. 206 says, will Blair Walsh or Eddie Lacy ever play in the NFL again?
I think Blair Walsh will, Eddie Lacy will, but right now you just can't find that time when they are going to be able to do it.
360 wants to know if Antonio Brown is currently a Hall of Famer.
He's going that way, yeah, no question. I mean, the numbers keep going. I mean, he's been, if you're the best receiver in football for more than 4 years, which he has been, I mean, that's a Hall of Fame caliber career. That's why, for example, I mean, I think he's had a better career than Brandon Marshall, but, I would put him ahead of Brandon.
206 wants to know if James Harrison is a Hall of Famer.
I think no, because, he doesn't have the sack numbers that you really need. I mean, he's got a lot of years. There's no question he'll be in the conversation, but I think he's going to fall short.
253 says, should the Seahawks take a look at Bashaun Breeland for cornerback depth?
I would say no. I mean, I don't think he has the right size dimensions that they're looking for. And so, no, I would say that, go with the group you have right now. And if you need to augment it, then kind of look around to see what's available.
360 says, if you find a spider in your house, do you squash it or set it free outside?
No, I'd squash it. Easily.
Me too.
I mean, I do it very quickly because, I mean, I just hate any kind of bugs. I mean, it's like, I make sure, even though sometimes it doesn't work all the time, I close the door as quickly as possible. And, we have so many people over here trying to take care of Pat. Sometimes they'll leave the door open. It'll drive me crazy because I'm always worried about some bug coming in. But, the other day I was, I have to go and get food pretty much every night. And so I was sitting outside in a place, and naturally there's a lot of bees that are out there. So I had to kind of put a glass on top of a bee and kind of end that relationship.
The 206 wants to know what you think of the Chargers this year.
I like them a lot. I really do. In fact, if anybody says, is there a team that we're not talking about that we should be? And it's the Chargers. I mean, because what I look at is you got Phillip Rivers. They've really got a good defense. They've got one of the best defensive lines, one of the best defensive lines in the league. They're real good at the cornerback position. And, they worry about tight end, but I think that's a good team. I think they're going to win the division and win 11 games.
253 says, if Felix gives up 5 runs over 6 innings again against the White Sox, do you switch him to a reliever or hope he turns it around?
Hope he turns it around. I think that's a tack that you got to take because, what you're looking at is that, I don't know, because, his problem is getting outs in the first inning. And, what's his earned run average? Over 9. And if he's going to be a relief pitcher, his first inning is going to be one where he's going to give up runs. And so that's going to be a little bit scary.
Right, the 425 says, where does Jordan Roos fit in? He seems like a very good prospect at guard, but with Fluker and possibly Sweezy, will he see time?
Well, you know, Sweezy hasn't signed, and Fluker's going to be the starter. I think he has a decent chance to really challenge and maybe get the backup guard position. I know they like him a lot. He's kind of a feisty type of guy. I mean, he's going to give you blocking all the way through. He does have a chance.
425 says, Professor, what NFL rookie will have the biggest impact on offense and defense this season?
NFL rookie, I mean, again, it's Saquon Barkley is going to have a big impact, I think, probably the biggest impact of all. You know, I don't necessarily know which receiver is going to step up. Last year, Cooper Kupp was probably the most impactful wide receiver, but I think you start to look, I mean, is Penny going to beat out Chris Carson? I mean, if he does, he'll have a big impact because, you know, most people think if he starts, he can gain over 900 yards. So I think those two you start to look at and then start to sort out. I think Geis, the running back in Washington, is going to make a big impact. So I think this is going to be a running back year. It was considered to be, you know, the best running back draft in more than a decade. And so I think these running backs are going to have all the big impacts.
The 334 says, John, I know you are excited to see the Seahawks' new lineup. I am a diehard Colts fan living in Seattle and very excited to see Andrew Luck on the field again. What is your take on the Colts' new direction?
Well, I mean, if you heard, again, I don't want to be ripping Nate Davis. I mean, Nate Davis has some very thoughtful stories. Remember, he did the story on USA Today ranking the 10 greatest defensive backs, defensive secondaries, and gave the Legion of Boom number one and the Steelers number two, and I thought that was right on. But in this case, I mean, he had the Colts with Andrew Luck going 2-14. I went through probably about 8 years of quarterbacks that are, you know, top five or top eight quarterbacks, and Andrew Luck has never been worse than 8-8, and he's had some bad teams, particularly in the years that are 8-8. So I think that if Andrew Luck plays 16 games, they'll be 8-8.
425 says, beans or no beans in chili?
I'd say beans. Yeah, you got to have some crunchies in there, even though, you know, beans aren't crunchy, but I say you have to have some beans, yeah.
So some added texture.
Yeah,
I like the beans. 206 says, Professor, will the Hawks O-line be better or worse than last year?
Much better. Much better. Because I think what it comes down to is that they were probably stretching it because they were taking these big bodies and having them just know, a lot of just moving around on outside zone plays, and so now I think you're going to see more variety. It's a bigger line. It's going to be more. It's concentrating more on winning the individual battle as opposed to trying to get bodies on bodies. So no, I think you're going to see a big improvement, and that should open up the running game. It should make it better for Russell, and you still wonder a little bit about the pass blocking, but if the run blocking is going to be better, which I think it will be, then it's going to be better overall.
206 says, how many games do the Warriors win next year?
Warriors, I think probably 63. Because what you look at right now is that Houston's declined. I mean, they lose two of their best defensive players. And if you go back 2 years ago, the Rockets, I mean, are good and a rising team. But, their problem was defense. I mean, James Harden's not going to play any defense. You know, if they get Carmelo Anthony, which they probably will, he doesn't play any defense. And so that makes them vulnerable. The great part of what you see from Golden State, they play defense when needed. Now, again, they kind of coast through the season. But, no, I think it's going to be Golden State 63 and another chance to win another championship.
All right, that's it for text today, Professor.
Okay, and you can check out the show, 710 Sports App, driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Coming up next, it's Dave Crosby.
John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On demand with the 710 Seattle Sports App.
And joining us is Dave Crosby. So, David, big news today. No surprise, Scott Service did get his contract extension. Well-earned, overdue, but I think it was a great move.
I don't know if it was overdue, but it's certainly well-earned, and hopefully the momentum continues. Hopefully they're not looking at the end of the year and thinking, geez, why do we do this?
Well, I think you can see the progress, and what I like is that the way that Jerry DePoto has set the roster so that really, I mean, even though you still have some age in Cruz, Seager's not getting any younger, Cano, the young players are pretty well locked in between now either 2021 and 23, and there'll be continuity.
Yep, continuity on the pitching staff too. I mean, so they are locked in, and not just a matter of getting it done on the field. But you're right, no surprise. And Scott Service, it kind of speaks to the Mariners, John. He's already the fourth winningest manager in Mariner history.
Mm-hmm. And of course, I mean, he is the only other manager to get past the fourth year. The other one being Lou Piniella. So I mean, he's now kind of in, even though he's not been to the playoffs, he is now establishing himself in this organization.
Well, he hasn't gotten to the fourth year yet.
Yeah. But of course he will. I mean, yeah, you're right. He could get fired at anybody, and as anybody can see.
Let's not jinx him before it starts.
No, that's true. Good point. But no, he has done such a great job, and I think that's well earned. So now,
So now you move forward from there. You're set. Your philosophy is established, and now it's the sprint to the finish.
Mm-hmm. I know the one thing was on Danny David Moore yesterday was talking about what guys are untouchable as far as trades, and Danny brought the idea of if you really wanted to get like a Chris Archer, you might have to give up a Mitch Haniger.
Not a chance.
I think I agree with
that's
you.
That's absolutely nonsense. That's nuts. You're not going to trade. You're not going to trade an all-star everyday player for a pitcher who's having an off year. Not a chance.
Yeah,
Mitch Haniger's not being – you're not – the point of making trades at this time of the year is to get better for a playoff run. You don't trade guys who have gotten you there. You trade prospects. So there may be a circumstance where if you're looking for a guy who's going to stay for more than a year or so as a position player, you might sacrifice another position player. But the deadline deals are about adding guys for prospects, not about making trades straight up. So – you're not going to get weak in one position to try and potentially get strong in another position.
No.
Not possible.
No, that's why I thought that would be a bad idea. In fact, if you had to make sacrifices on the current roster, I think there's only, maybe a pitcher or something like that, but I would have to think that you're looking at two young guys like Heredia and maybe Ryan Healy, and even though I wouldn't like to give those guys up, you might have to cost you one of those guys to get a good trade.
Be nuts to give up Ryan Healy. You got contract control over him. He's hit 25 home runs last year. He's already hit 18 this year. I don't see that. You don't want to trade a guy on the roster. You can trade Robinson Cano. If someone wants to pick up his contract, that they're welcome to it. But otherwise, I think for the most part, what you're looking to do, unless you're really going to go against the grain here, is you're looking to add, not subtract and add. So you're not looking to make even Steven deals. You're looking to trade prospects for starting players. That's what they're going to do, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you have to just be cautious of that. That's where I think the problem lies in that, you have to have players. I mean, that's what's the beauty of what Jerry's been able to do and what earned him the contract extension. I mean, one, you get a guy like Haniger who is an all-star now, and you've got him under control through so many years, and then you are able to get Segura and then quickly double down and get him under contract. Mm-hmm. And so you have two all-star position players locked up.
Young player too.
Yes.
So in both cases, young guys. But no, what they'll do is they'll look to add from the periphery and trade prospects, or a straight position for position deal could be something that happens. You talked about pitchers. You could trade someone on your staff currently for another starter. But that's the only circumstance you're going to do something like that with.
Mm-hmm.
You're certainly not going to trade an everyday all-star player for a starting pitcher who's having an off year.
Although, I mean, the team I'm going to be interested in seeing when they play them is Arizona, because it's like Arizona gave up J.D. I mean, look, Arizona has done so much for playoff runs of two teams. J.D. Martinez, which is maybe the best offseason signing of anybody going to Boston, and then you get the Haniger Segura trade, which is, going down, debatable with where it is on the Randy Johnson front, but one of the top two trades in Mariner history.
Yep, and the other one wasn't a deal. They lost Martinez as a free agent, obviously, but they've subtracted those three players and are in first place, or a half game out of first place. You know what that tells me, John? They've got a good organization.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing that the Mariner deal hadn't hurt them even a little bit. They're in the postseason last year. They're getting a starting play out of Marte, but certainly not what they could have been getting, and yet it hadn't impacted them at all, which also goes to show that deadline deals are no guarantee either.
No question.
There are plenty of examples of those not working out because baseball is such a fickle sport. I mean, like we were talking about it with Bob yesterday. You trade in the NBA, you trade for a guy who's averaging 25 points a game. When he comes to your team, he's going to average 25 points a game.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, unless you don't want him to, he's going to play to the back of his basketball card, so to speak. Baseball, no guarantee that that's going to happen. Guys can sometimes be outstanding. Guys can sometimes be terrible. And for nothing, no other reason but the changing of scenery. I mean, it's just not the same thing. Especially in a sport where you don't succeed as much as you do in the other ones. So it's always something of a crapshoot to mess with chemistry and things like that, unless you have real needs, and the Mariners obviously are a team with some needs.
Yeah, they are.
For me, the Red Sox, I'd be very hesitant to make any moves if I was the Red Sox. Not saying that they won't, but they're 38 games over .500. How much better do they think they can get?
Well, I mean, but you can see they will make moves. And the reason is, I mean, and it's funny because everybody now is going off their scouting report and doing things that they needed to do. I mean, the Indians go from like last year, about a 2.5 earned run average from their relief pitchers to over 5. So what do? They make a move with San Diego and get a relief pitcher. And, you know, it gets 2 relief pitchers. Then you look at Boston, their first move was to get a utility or a first baseman that can do better against left-handed pitching because they're not that good with left-handed pitching. And so they make those type of moves. And so, they'll be bulking that up, and you can see what the Yankees are going to be doing. They'll add two starting pitchers.
Need pitching.
Oh, yeah.
They've had some injuries there.
Yeah, but when you look at their pitching staff, I mean, you know, Luis Severino is one of the best in baseball, but then your next guy's Bartolo Colon, and there's a lot of question marks after that.
Yeah, you've had a bunch of injuries there, and we've seen some of their young pitchers who look pretty good.
Oh yeah, no,
when the Mariners saw them, they look pretty good, but they're definitely going to be in the market for some starting pitching. Every team is always willing to make a move to get better, but I'm just saying that it's sometimes fool's gold, especially when you're going really well, to think that you can somehow do better by addressing what perceives to be a need and messing up with team chemistry a little bit. That's for the rare team that seems to have it all, and that rare team that seems to have it all right now is Boston.
I thought it was interesting that Jerry DePoto yesterday said that he thinks 75% of the deadline trades are going to be for relief pitching. Boy, has this game changed.
Mm-hmm. It sure has. Makes a guy like Zach Britton of Baltimore a very popular young man.
Oh, no question. I mean, you know, that's. I don't know if I link him up here because that might be too costly, but they can absorb salary. They just can't absorb too much.
Well, they can absorb plenty of salary if they want to. I don't think that's necessarily an issue. It's just going to be about talent. And like I said, when you're doing deals for guys who are in their last year, people will tend to look down the line and look at talent that may not be available for a couple of years rather than AAA prospects. Now, it's different when you're going after a guy like Manny Machado, but for just a garden variety reliever and something like that, that's normally the cost.
Pretty interesting to see these moves that are becoming up. So what do you expect for this series of the White Sox?
Well, I better win 2 out of 3 for sure. I mean, if not, the worry about a swoon continues. But if they take 2 out of 3, it's good momentum and into an interesting spot in the schedule. Like we talked about yesterday, John, the wild card race is almost exclusively in the West. It's the A's, the Mariners, and I suppose the Angels are hanging by a thread out there. And the Mariners have a ton of games left against the A's, so. It's the far more important thing for them to do is take care of business when they play Oakland. They get tons of games left with them, tons of games left in the division. It's an interesting wild card race in that I don't expect anyone from the Central to come in. Maybe the Twins, but I don't expect it. And certainly no one from the East is going to come in. They're going to be trading out. So it's a battle with the A's for the rest of the way.
And it's going to be fun to watch, and a lot of division games are going to be coming up right now. Hey, one thing to kind of wrap it up here, yeah. I know Rob Manfred was talking about the idea of 2 expansion teams, which could put Portland in play for a baseball team, somewhere after 2021. But, I think it would be great if they can get to 32 teams and then go back instead of 5 teams in a division, 4, because it's just way too many division games, I think, in baseball.
Well, I mean, that's. I'm not sure that would necessarily change that. I mean, baseball is a regional sport. They're trying to emphasize division play as much as anything. That's where it doesn't work for the Mariners, of course, because it might with a Portland team, but because they've got no natural rivals. I mean, the closest team is 750 miles away. It's what the Seahawks have dealt with forever and ever, and it's why the Seahawks, except for that brief period with the 49ers, never really had a true rival where they felt like the team was a rival and the other team felt like they were the main rival. I mean, you remember the AFC days. Seahawks fans and Seahawks were certainly up for the Raiders and the Broncos, but Raiders and the Broncos did not consider the Seahawks their primary rival. Seahawks and the 49ers were primary rivals, man, for 3 great years, and that was a lot of fun, and it's because of distance. But baseball, I think, likes the fact that they have the Yankees and the Red Sox playing a whole lot at the end of the season, that you have teams in the division who are contending for division titles. They're trying to put sanctity into those division races. So I'm not so sure they'd switch to 4-team divisions or not. They might. They might go with 4 4-team divisions and might add a tier of playoffs off. We'll see. But I agree with you about your original point. I think Portland would be a leading candidate for that for sure.
So what's on Bob Gross and Tom today?
I have this John Clayton guy going to join us.
I've heard of
him. Going to talk about how the NFL is still stumbling and bumbling.
Oh, what a disaster.
I know, man.
It gets worse and worse and worse. Maybe the players can bail them out and fix it up.
Maybe.
Maybe. But, I'm not optimistic.
I'm not either, John.
They got to do something.
We'll talk to you at 2.
Talk to you at 2. And, of course, I'll be back tomorrow at 9, 9 to 12. Dave Grosby joining us at 10. And then I'll be back on Monday at 10. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.